Maybe it still happened, maybe it didn't, but I don't think that we have enough as a board to find that violation. Going down to the ARS 3222, 3221, it's released at AACR 311.52. I feel that those are all valid. Those were all issues that we did not properly take care of. We didn't have an estimate. We didn't have a signed authorization. We did not have, you know, documentation of the heart rate and respiratory rate and record. All of those violations are consistent with what is missing in the medical record. And I understand that, you know, we get lax as we continue on our path in veterinary medicine, but there are still regulations that we have to follow. So I would make a motion in the case of 2512 to find violations, 3222, 3211, gross negligence, failure to appropriately use epinephrine in CPR. I would also find violation 3222, 3221 as relates to R311.502C, failure to provide an estimate of fees. H1, failure to obtain signed authorization for surgical procedure. H2, failure to examine the dog within 6 hours of performing surgery. H3, failure to document the dog's heart rate and respiratory rate and record them in the records, animal's medical record. And then H4, failure to continuously monitor the dog until the animal is extubated and able to swallow.
Okay,
that's my motion.
The last one.
I strike that.
It's more lack of properly addressing respiratory distress that it was not.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll strike the H4.
So, you know, just in looking at this case, I mean, gross negligence when the IC had it was failure to deal with the dog's respiratory distress, which we heard, and I think we all know that it was dealt with. And this diminishing the pet owner's concerns, but I don't necessarily know that we have enough to say that that actually happened. Where they had found a violation with regards to the epinephrine, the dosing of the epinephrine was under professionally acceptable procedures rather than gross negligence. So I'm just wondering if we want to consider that as an option, separate from the other part of that, which is just failure to show respect, because that I think we've ruled out. So it would really just be 322212 as it relates to R511 for overdose of the epinephrine. And then I guess my only other concern here is it's a previous felid dog that had concerns with the medical records and not having authorization, which in a previous felid dog would make it even worse. But then on top of that, what was the level of communication around the risks associated with anesthesia and previous felid dogs? How much was this owner kind of informed? And you know, I hear a little bit about, you know, normally we position them one way and then this dog would position another way and we're able to bring it back. I don't know that that would have changed anything for me, but I just start going, did you guys feel that the right things were taken into account knowing this dog was the first outcome?
Yeah, I mean, the two reasons that this could happen, the two most common would be the positioning of the pet and laryngeal edema is the other one. So you've got to make sure that chest movement and respiratory movement is not adequate respiration in a recovery brachius dog. It's movement of air. So they left the tube in until it was chewing, okay, we all use that term, or looking at you and trying to spit it out, you know, they did that. So, then what happened? Did we have a original heat or did we have a positioning of the neck? I don't know how.
But it was also like that owner was the one moving the dog, which I think is a little bit odd. I don't know what their level of expertise is or training or.
And how do we evaluate that?
as
an owner being involved in the case, that would be.
I mean, those would just be concerns, but maybe that's just something we hear in the discussion as to, and I think we heard that when we're kind of longer but I just, I bring those two things up. So one, should the epinephrine fall under gross negligence or professionally acceptable procedures, and fine with all the medical record stuff.
So did you have concern that it might be, need to be a motion regarding chronic communication? A violation.
Well, it's just hard because it's like, you have a high-risk patient, and you don't have any documentation for the medical records and the forms weren't signed, but then at the same time, you have an owner that clearly is familiar enough with the clinic that they're in the actual rules, so clearly there was communication going on, right? So it's just a hard one to really know, but that's why I bring it up, is just because this may be somebody that we're really familiar with, you still have to go through the same...
Those are the ones that bite you.
And so I'm sitting there going, you know, maybe that's a little bit of what happened in this case, but again, I can't say for sure.
And I can agree on the epinephrine not being under gross negligence, but being under professional procedures.
Yeah.
Okay, so
we have to say that the epinephrine was a cause of the demise of the dog. We can't say
right.
that. Or
right.
any gross negligence.
So we modified that motion to 3222.12 for the dose of the epinephrine. We left off anything about the communication, nothing. We did not have concern about the inappropriate potential communication. And then the medical records all stayed the same, excluding H4.
Correct.
All right, so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Dr. Byrne,
aye. Dr. James?
Aye.
Dr. Dosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Nay.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
We made the exceptions to the proposed facts and finding law from the IC.
Yeah.
So we would accept the findings of fact, but the conclusions of law were modified as stated in the motion. Yes.
Let me just ask Tracy. Tracy, are you comfortable with what you have?
Yes. Thank you.
Can we go over Priors?
Priors?
Yes, please.
Okay, let's see here. 2002, there was a case that was dismissed with no violation, but Dr. Robinson was issued a letter of concern regarding unprofessional behavior. 2004, Dr. Robinson was issued a letter of concern for looks like a complainant filed a complaint and respondent billed the client for the alleged time that he spent responding and appearing before the board for the complaint, so the board issued him a letter of concern. In 2005, Dr. Robinson was issued a letter of concern regarding communication. And in 2005, Dr. Robinson was issued a letter of concern regarding unprofessional conduct. Let's see. In 2009, Dr. Robinson was placed on probation for record keeping violations. Was on probation for 1 year in order to do 4 hours of continuing education at the emergency animal clinic. In 2024, there was a consent agreement. Victoria, that one I think is as offered. offered and has not been accepted. Is that correct, Victoria?
That is correct. It was just, yes, just barely offered, yes.
Okay. Let's see here. In 1991, Dr. Robinson failed to change his address with us and was offered a civil penalty. In 1992, it's an old complaint. I don't have a lot of information on it, but looks like he was placed on probation for 1 year. That one looks like it had some information about being rescinded. I don't know the exact outcome of that. That was in 1993.
Okay, so I would be looking at probation for a year. CE, say 6 hours, 3 in CPR, and 3 in record keeping. And I would say at this point a civil penalty given. Got repeated record keeping violations, so a civil penalty of $500. It's a motion.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All of them.
Dr. Byrne, aye. Dr. James?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Thompson?
Aye. Make a motion that if the consent agreement is not accepted and signed in 30 days, we move to informal.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, so that will conclude case 2512. That takes us, Victoria, to 2502, which I believe we need to get Dr. Wright on the phone for.
Thank you.
Bye.
There's one person I should do. Hi, Dr. Wright. It's Victoria. I've got you on speakerphone.
Great.
The board's ready to start the next IIR.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So this IIR is 2502. Good morning, Dr. Wright. We'll let the record show that Dr. Wright is with us, and we will also let the record show that we have Dr. Thompson recused from case 2502. Tracy, would you like to read the summary for that one?
Yes, let me get there. Case 2502. The complainant is Linda Griggs. The respondent is Lisa Lane of DVM. On May 8, 2024, Giorgio, a 12.5-year-old male snowshoe Siamese, was presented to respondent for urinary issues of lethargy. Due to the cat's temperament, the cat was anesthetized to collect urine and blood for testing. An A-test was performed and no bladder stones were identified. The cat was discharged later that day. On May 9, 2024, complainant reported the cat was still having issues. Based on blood work and complainant being unsure if the cat was urinating or not, respondent recommended starting the cat on antibiotics and buprenorphine. On May 10, 2024, the cat was presented to respondent for evaluation. Respondent anesthetized the cat to remove the urinary blockage. Perineal urethroscopy surgery was discussed with the complainant, which was declined. The cat was hospitalized overnight for treatment and monitored and discharged the following day, on May 12, 2024. The cat was presented to Blue Pearl on emergency. The cat's urinary obstruction was relieved, radiographs revealed urinalis, and cystotomy and PE surgery was recommended. On May 13, 2024, the cat was presented to respondent for a PU and cystotomy surgery. The cat remained in the hospital until May 15, 2024. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, so 2502, we do not have the complaint or the respondent, although we do have counsel monitoring only. Again, Dr. Mosley, you're the lead officer.
Okay, this case has a lot to unpack here. The cat Geo who came in the first time exhibiting signs of lower urinary tract disease goes by a lot of names. I learned FUS, then Flutie, FLVDE, and then interstitial cystitis or idiopathic cystitis, so I'll just stick with the FUS. It goes by a lot of labels, but this syndrome is your cat, male or female, with straining to urinate, often blood in the urine, frequent trips to the box, that type of thing. Sometimes very difficult to treat, diet, different medications. I wish over the 40 years we had a better handle on this, but we don't, or we know. But the particular concern is if you have a male cat, you can get concretions, mucus, cells, crystals plug in that narrow urethra, and then that turns it into an emergency situation. But also this case is involved with urinary bladder, urolithes, or stones, we commonly refer to them. Cat. And that is a related, but it's also a different syndrome. Bladder stones are different from FUS and how we manage them and how we diagnose them and so forth. So the question in this is, should this respondent have radiographed this cat and discovered these stones? And it's, in my opinion, the standard of care for an obstructed cat with FUS, symptoms of FUS two times before, and now is obstructed, can be met without radiographs. I don't radiograph every case of FUS and obstruction. That would include catheter placement, radiographing for catheter placement. The respondent relieved the obstruction and then placed the Tomcat catheter, which those are very short. I don't radiograph for the placement of the Tom. If I've got a urine stream coming through that catheter, I'm not too worried about placement of a very short catheter. We also have the factor that these urolithes were calcium and were very tiny. And that is very rare. When I saw that, I went, I don't believe I've ever had a case where it came back calcium. And then it's actually less than 1%. We usually get struvite, ammonium phosphate, or calcium oxide. So this is an unusual case. Very small, very rare. Going back to the radiograph, though, the Blue Pearl, the next hospital that on the second obstruction, their radiographs then showed the bladder stones, if you will. But if you look at those radiographs, those were all with a catheter in place. They didn't initially radiograph the patient. They did so because now they placed a very long catheter type, and when you do that, sometimes, or you should take a radiograph to see where that catheter went. They can knot up in there. You gotta be careful with those things. They're so long. And so then they went, oh wow, they're stones. So I don't think the respondent not taking a radiograph and discovering these stones rises to a violation of, at all for those reasons. All three of the radiographs we had show a catheter in, and that's when they found the stones. But there's other issues in this case again. And I'll just go through them. Client communication issue here. After the respondent initially saw the patient for FUS symptoms, not obstructed, then there was a conversation the next day where between the respondent and the complainant, where it says, owner called and he is not urinating today. And he keeps going back and forth to the litter box, has not really drank any water and so forth, and then they entered into a discussion about the lab work and about some possible pyelonephritis based on lab work and all. But there was not the typical cat and I urinating needs to go to emergency or to come in right now. And so I'm concerned about that standard. Even if you're unclear whether a patient with a history of FUS two times, even if you're unclear whether they're urinating or not, you shouldn't say, well, let's wait and see what happens tomorrow. So I had that concern. Secondly,
referring to the follow-up on the 9th. So the 8th is
yes.
The initial visit, and then the follow-up on the 9th, because I'm, like, the medical records are slightly different, but it looks like the owner wasn't sure if the cat was urinating. We couldn't tell between the two cats.
Mm-hmm. And then we heard in the IC that was not the case.
That wasn't the case.
That I know my cat wasn't urinating.
And then there was the respondent wanting the cat to be brought in to rule out blockage, but not until the following morning, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly, right? Like,
coming
he wanted
to
try the pain meds and antibiotics and then do the following morning if the cat wasn't urinating.
Correct.
And my understanding from the materials was that was based on the fact that she thought the owner couldn't tell if the cat was urinating or not, even though the owner literally said, no, I need to come.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what happened. And then I guess my point is, okay, there's some confusion here. He's an FUS cat. He might be blocked. That needs to be decided right now. Because the longer they're blocked, as we all know, the bigger the problem. So that was one concern about that client communication and not saying, urinating, maybe not urinating, maybe he's still doing FUS stuff, but boy, we better check to see if he's blocked or not. Not come in and pick up some medication and wait until tomorrow and see what happens, which ultimately turned out to be blocked again. So I had that concern. And my second concern was when the respondent released the patient after catheter removal. Catheter was in to relieve the obstruction and then hospitalized the cat overnight with the appropriate fluids. And then the next day, which was the shorter day, that they were closed at 1:00, right before noon, stopped the fluids, pulled the catheter, and the only indication we had that this cat was urinating was a technician saying, there's some urine on the towel. And then they released the cat. And it ultimately re-obstructed. So, it's standard how long you leave the catheter, and that varies tremendously from that to that. Some 24 hours or less, some as much as 3 days. And tell them, like, your cat's going to be here for 3 days because I don't pull a catheter for 3 days. And there's a lot of controversy there. I personally look for the urine to start to clear before I pull a catheter. But that doesn't matter. But what does matter is that it's standard, no matter how long you leave that catheter in. Once you take it out, you need to demonstrate that the cat is passing urine, either by palpation of the bladder, seeing a stream, or seeing him go. They never saw him go. They put a litter box in there, and he didn't go in it. Then it's 1 o'clock, it's time to release him. There's some urine on the towel, we're good to go. We can send him. That concerns me because it's standard. Before releasing a cat, post obstruction, that they demonstrate that they're urinating and pass urine. So that was number two. Number three, this azotemia was kind of, well, I thought it was dehydration, and I made the owner aware of it, but then there was no follow-up. It was a creatinine of 3.5, which is stage 2 to 3 renal failure. Yeah, it could be post-obstruction, but it might not be, too. It might be a renal failure case. In addition to this, there was no recommendation to follow up on that. And then number four, these radiographs that the respondent said, after this all happened and the cat ultimately came back to her now for the perineal urethroscopy and a cystotomy to remove these stones now, she says, well, I'll radiograph it, no charge. Which, as far as I can tell, she never took any radiographs. They were invoiced, probably at no charge. It says radiographs invoiced, but there were no radiographs taken in the record or interpretation of them. So I got confused, and I asked Tracy, I said, I need the radiographs from Banfield first, but I also need the radiographs from the respondent. And so then I got radiographs from Banfield, the ones I just talked about with the stones and with the catheter in place, not labeled at all, which is concerning. But the radiographs then I got from the respondent through Tracy were the same three radiographs, the ones from Banfield. So that's important because it's standard of care post-cystotomy to take a radiograph. I could understand not taking a pre, we've already got it, it's right there, from the van field. But it's standard to take a post-op. And so we didn't have, I don't think, any radiographs, even though they were indicated to the complainant that they would be done. So I know that's a lot, and it's really kind of almost a little contrary to the complaint, although the complaint did bring up some of these factors that I just outlined. So I'm leaning toward a violation in this case. And so
with some of the concerns that have been asked of the veterinarian, would you want to move to an informal?
Yeah, that was my.
But I feel like we might need, before we can make a motion, mm-hmm. find a violation, I'd rather move to an informal.
That was my first thought. And then I guess I got into it and said, I'm pretty clear on all this, so I can move forward. But that was my first thought, too. And I think that's probably a good idea, so we could hear more from her regarding these issues and not focus on that, not taking her radiograph initially. So, I will rescind my motion and then make a motion to move to a formal. I think that's a good idea.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? All right, motion passes in 2502. So that will take us to the three pack. 2506, 2507, 2508. And then on this case, we will still have Dr. Wright by phone, but we have Dr. Byrne refused and Dr. Thompson back from wherever she was. And then, Tracy, would you like to read the summary for these three?
Yes, so the summary is the same for all three, for case 25, 06, 07, and 08. The complainant is Michael Herbert. The respondent in 06 is Emily Osmond. Case 2507 is Wendy Patterson. And case 2508 is Tammy Watt. And she's a CBT. On November 30th, 2023, Bugatti, a 3.5-year-old male maple cat, was presented to respondent for drooling and restlessness. Diagnostics were performed, constipation was suspected, and treatment was administered and prescribed prior to discharge. After arriving home, the cat triggered feline non-recognition aggression from his housemate. The cats began fighting, and it took almost 5 months for the cats to reside together as they had prior to the veterinary visit. The claimant was upset that no one from the premises had warned them about the possibility of the cats fighting. The claimant expressed concerns that stemmed from the cat's visit on November 30, 2023. An estimate for services was not provided, no proper follow-up call. The cat's medical records were sent to another veterinary without consent. No proper referral for the FNRA. No proper instructions with respect to introducing the cat into the household after the appointment. And the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded that the board dismiss these issues with no violation. So the committee recommended a violation for case 2506, 2507, and 2508. And the motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Right, and then we do have Mr.
Stoll
monitoring only.
Yes, at all three. Thank you.
Karen, so we don't have anyone here, and I'm the lead on this three pack. And I think this was a really tough case because certainly there were things that could have been done differently to help in the situation, but not necessarily things that were obviously present at the time, right? Like if one of those where we're looking hindsight, oh, I wish we had done that, or I wish we had known that that was going to happen. I did have, you know, a few questions regarding the conversation around with the veterinarian around informing owners of this in the future, and how that conversation went. And then when the owner had call to say that there was some problems, kind of how that conversation went. It sounded like it was more of they waited a few days to call, then at the point that it was not getting any better, they called, but I wasn't real clear on what was recommended at that point. I'm less concerned about what happened on the first day because I think that's a condition that maybe on the first day none of us really talk about, but once we start seeing that we have signs of it, I think this is something that we need to bring up, and I just wasn't clear on that. I think at this point, I would make a motion that we go to informal. I kind of debated on whether to handle these all three separately and release two of them and only the vet that was actually attending to this case. But then I was like, oh, if that opens up something and we get into responsible vet issues, then it creates a whole another issue. So I kind of was like, maybe with the whole three pack, for all three of them, that the motion is that we move to informal to get more information.
I agree in regards to what happened with the cat during that 5-month period. But my concern is, I think we need to state right now that as far as making this something that we're responsible for communicating to the veterinary community, and that's not our responsibility. So if we go to informal, it's not to discuss. You guys need to re-educate the whole industry.
Oh, yeah.
I think the complaint needs to know that that's not our purpose. We don't have anything to do with that.
Yeah.
And so it's just based on your concerns regarding the care of the cat.
Yeah, and that would be the whole purpose for it, is just to see kind of the vet side too on like, how serious did you take this when we were realizing that things were going, you know, not smoothly at home.
I think we have to also be careful, though, because I don't think we want to dictate that every veterinarian has to deal with every single disease and every single subspecialty in this industry. I mean, cardiologists don't, in human medicine, don't do colonoscopies on 78-year-old men for a reason. It's like they don't want to do that. The referral was offered for behavior. I don't think that we have to be very careful that we're forcing someone into a position to practice medicine on something they're not comfortable with. Behavior is a very difficult thing. So, I mean, are we saying that the referral, which is in our practice act, is not enough? I mean, that we have to be very careful with that, because this could get into a little dicey situation.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we had that conversation a little bit earlier too about veterinarians have the right to not treat conditions,
yeah.
Right? They have every right.
Correct.
To say, I don't do surgery and I'm not doing this procedure, or I don't do behavior and I'm not doing this. And the referral, I think for me it was more around just getting a little bit more comfortable with the fact that the referral was clearly made and why, and kind of just some of the communication with the owner about why potentially this isn't something that's typically in discharge instructions and things like that, more so than trying to force the veterinarian into treating something that they don't treat.
But the purpose of moving to an informal is if we think there's a violation. I mean, do we truly think there's a violation here, or is it a referral was made? So, I mean, that satisfies the statute. I want to make sure we're not going to a informal just to drag something out to discuss it more. I mean, do we truly think there's a violation here, and was referring to a behaviorist, even though the behaviorist was backed up, was that not enough? Did that not satisfy the statute? I mean, I guess that's the question before moving it to an informal.
Yeah, I think it would be more around communication and professionally acceptable communication, but not necessarily on not treating the behavior.
Okay, I just want to make sure we're clear on what we're discussing in an informal.
Yeah,
so, because like I said, thank you.
And is the concern with respect to case 2507 primarily, Dr. Patterson?
Is it just all three, like you said?
Well, that was the thought, was some of these obviously were more involved than others, but I'm afraid, I think the bigger issue is the communication between the veterinarian and the owner. but I'm hesitant to move any of them, make a motion on any of them at this point, because it can change.
Historically, there's a problem with excluding.
Yeah. Because then we find something out that changes what we would have done, and so that's why I kind of just moved the whole three pack. But does anyone else have concerns with that piece of it?
No.
Okay. All right, so new motion. Did I have a second?
Second.
Could you repeat the motion, please?
The motion was to move case 2506, 07, and 08 to an informal.
Thank you.
And we have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Nay.
All right, so 4-1, so motion carries. And that will finish our IIR. All right, Victoria, I know Dr. Wright is staying on for section 4, number 2, but do we want to do that one next, then, so that we can get off after that?
Yeah. I'll be around if you need to call me back. It's not a big deal, so whatever works for you guys.
Okay, so let's move to section 4, number 2, and do that one while we have Dr. Wright, and if we need more later, Dr. Wright, we'll put you back on the phone.
Sounds good. I'll keep my phone by me. Thank you.
All right, so Dr. Nussberger, would you like to step forward?
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Good.
Good. Downtown down is just as chilly down here.
I know. It's 23 degrees when I left my house this morning.
All right, you win.
I'll take the 53.
I didn't mention that Dr. is on the phone. Dr. Nosley is your case. Just for it.
So we've got some information from your support. So we've got from your work, you're getting rave reviews, so congratulations on that. Sounds like you're quite the asset there, and sounds like we've had no other issues with the breathalyzer since we had it replaced, so that's a plus. It's nice when it's the machine's fault, right?
Yes.
Yes. And also looks like you have been going to your meetings regularly, and how are those going for you? So we did get a letter from your therapist saying that there was no longer a need for the monthly sessions.
Who's Victoria? It's hard to see folks all the way down.
I guess I just need for myself clarification because of the consent agreement or like what can be done? Is it strictly based on the recommendation of the therapist because they are the one that is the specialist in the area?
I would have to see what the language is.
Okay. I did notice that we did not have any results from a test.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Victoria usually tells me if you don't have them. Okay. I can have my doctor send them.
Okay. Yeah. There's no record of any tests since the last time that we have been met. So. I definitely want to make sure that we get that in our file.
Did you get called from the other lab?
I haven't been called in December.
Yeah, I mean, it is early in December. We're a week earlier than normal, so...
The last one was the day after our last board meeting. And if you don't, I'll just have my doctor send them.
Are we good to assume that that was negative? Do you know the results?
Okay. Yes.
Good. Excellent.
I'm happy to forward them, but you guys would prefer it came from my doctor's office.
Yes, for sure. So yes, if you could just make sure that we get that, and then we will look into the language of the consent agreement as far as the recommendation from your therapist about stepping down that piece of things. Congratulations on getting to this stage, and as we've said before, just keep at it. I know it's a tough journey, so keep up the good work, and it's amazing. It's great that you have support of your team at work as well.
Yes. I like the team at work.
That makes work so much more enjoyable.
Sure does. I don't have any further questions.
Thank you for coming up.
Did you want to wait like
sure. Yeah. Have you had snow up there yet?
We have not. I've heard of a dusting up on the Flagstaff snowball.
Okay.
Not much, because they're making snow.
Yeah.
Here, because I saw that they opened. Mm-hmm. So they must have gotten some, but then opened, and now it's all like snow. We did have someone.
I'm just hoping we get any precipitation, I'd be happy.
Yes. Same thing down here. We're not down that much for any rain, no. So.
Taking the consent agreement. it's a little vague, but I think what we could do is reach back out to the counselor and say, if, you know, ask if she believes that, you know, that it's been completed, and if she does, state that in writing, and then we can relieve her of that responsibility under the consent agreement.
We have that in writing.
Well, was she definitive?
She says, Dawn, that we are no longer in need of monthly sessions, and is recommended she maintain her current recovery structure and work with her sponsor.
So, but she's not recommending, I understand that she's not recommending, you know, that the monthly, but is that being terminated, or is she recommending something perhaps less frequently?
Fair. Okay. So we don't get more information
just
and then
decide from there? Just
okay.
From that.
That's what we will do. So I have no other questions. Like I said, good job, everyone's worker. Safe travels back up to the cold country.
Yeah.
Happy holidays.
Angie and I were talking, and they said if you weren't comfortable with that, you would go to every 3 months.
Is that what she said?
Yeah, if you weren't comfortable with this, anyway.
Yeah, we'll get further clarification.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, travel back to the post. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good holidays.
You guys have a good Christmas.
All right. So, Dr. Wright, that concludes, I think, what we needed you for, at least at the moment. I think we're good.
All right, thank you. Yeah, let me know if you need me for anything else. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye. You too. Thank you all. Bye-bye. Bye. See you next year.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Then we do have Dr. Miracle here, but we're also a little late for a time clock break. So what would people like to do? Would we like to take a break or move forward with Dr. Miracle? Okay. So we will move to section 4, number 1. And Dr. Miracle, if you want to come forward.
Dr. Miracle, did you want to wait for your turn?
No.
Thank you for being here today. For the record, would you just state your name?
Dr. Miracle.
Great. And then Jane, I think you're the lead on this one. Jane's by phone today.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I just have some follow-up questions on the attendance information that we received from Kingman Animal Hospital. There appears, and maybe you can enlighten us with more information on this, that you're averaging about one unexcused absence per month there, and you work like less than. The max, I think, was like 7 days in a month working there. So you're roughly how many hours, how many days a week are you working there? And would be question number one. And question number two is the reasons for the number of unexcused absences.
So I work 4/10, typically Tuesday through Friday. There were some pre-planned vacation areas there, so I think in June I had about 7 days of work because I was out of the country. So those explain several of those. I had to ask her too about that because I was sick, and whenever her policy, the office manager's policy, is that even when you call out for an illness, it's marked down as an unexcused absence because it wasn't something that was planned in advance.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, Dr. Miracle, this does not represent every day you work there.
No, it does not.
The tens, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. I think we need additional clarification on. The pattern of unexcused absences, and I think we need it both from you and from Kingman Animal Hospital.
Has the hospital indicated that there's been any concern with the number of unexcused absences?
They have not, outside of the fact that it up until probably mid-November, there was a slow period. So if I have to call out because I'm sick, then some of our techs end up losing hours. So the concern was brought to me to just kind of keep that in mind and make sure that if I have to call out for an illness, that it is truly an illness that I cannot work through.
And if COVID taught us anything, it was to...
Yes, as I said, it's averaging. The concern is the frequency. And pretty consistently, once to twice a month.
So, Jane, are you just recommending that we get a statement from Kingman with regards to if they have any concern on the unexcused?
For the unexcused absences, each one. And I welcome Dr. Miracle's written response to the same.
I don't know if we necessarily, I'm just from my perspective, I don't know if we need a written response because we have her in front of us kind of explaining what those unexcused absences are. So I'm not sure I would necessarily feel like we would get, but if, I think what I heard, Jane, is that you said she would be welcome to if she thought of anything, we shouldn't have to.
Okay, so you feel there's information explaining the each unexcused absence?
Well, I think that I see what you're saying as far as there being an excuse. I think the information we have provided to us ahead of time, and then just from what Dr. Miracle was saying today, that there were some times that she was sick, and days that she is sick is being marked as unexcused. And I know just from managing people in general, like everybody has a different level of what is sick and I'm going to stay home, and so there was some discussion around make sure you're staying home for the right reasons and not just because you have a headache.
So, we've heard from Dr. Miracle.
Right.
We need to hear from the clinic.
Right. So that's what I was saying, is I think getting a confirmation letter from the clinic just as to are they concerned about this, or has there been any discussion that we should be concerned about it, but otherwise, I think we've already heard from Dr. Miracle. I don't know that there's anything else she could add.
Okay, so you don't think we need anything from Dr. Miracle or Kingman Animal Hospital?
No. We would like to hear from the Animal Hospital, yes.
Okay, good. Okay, that I agree with. Okay, so do we need a formal motion or just direct staff to reach out to Kingman Animal Hospital for more of an explanation on the unexcused absence?
Ms. Solomon, could I ask for clarification on what time frame you're looking for?
I'm looking at the sheet that was provided to us. The time sheet that goes from, and again, if any of these precede her consent agreement, let me know, Victoria. It's from May of 2024 through November. There are about 8 unexcused absences.
So, Ms. Solomon, members of the board, so that's kind of a long way back. So, if the Kingman Animal Hospital does not have a record of those specifics, can they just state them?
Well, we have the details, so if it says unexcused, it'll say it was for personal reasons, or she left early because she was sick, or so I think they have given us what they quoted it as. I think the question is, for me, it's not necessarily related to a time frame, it's just, are you concerned, or is there any concern on your behalf with the number of unexcused absences? And just leave it at that. That's just a question.
We don't need a discussion of each individual.
I don't, because we have that. I just want to know if they feel like there's something we should be concerned about related to those. And then I'm assuming the LWOP is left without permission?
Leave without pay.
We would not pay. So, the, I mean.
Yeah, I didn't count those. I didn't count the excused leave without pay. I'm only looking at the unexcused, most of which the reason given is just personal.
So are you comfortable if we direct the authorities to reach out to Kingman and just find out if there's any concern from their perspective with regards to the number of unexcused absences?
Well, I'm concerned. My concern is this any kind of red flag, since it's recurring? Any kind of red flag as far as her progression and recovery? Because unexcused absences can be a red flag.
So, what would you be expecting that Kingman would be able to tell us besides whether they're concerned about it or not?
If they're concerned about it, I would be interested in their opinion, but it doesn't answer my question.
So what specifically would you want Victoria to ask them?
If they have any explanation for, quote, the personal unexcused absences, leaving, getting sick once in 8 months and leaving work early does not concern me. But leaving early for personal, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. For those seven, I'd like to know if they have any further information on the reason for an explanation of personal.
I think I understand. So maybe rephrase the question to Kingman that it looks like there have been seven or eight unexcused absences, and we're believing that you're doing that based on it wasn't planned in advance and she had it for personal reasons. Do you have any concern with her taking those personal days? Okay? Because I don't think work is going to pry into why she's taking her personal day. I think that would be against most HR policies.
Well, that's why I was also suggesting that we also hear from Dr. Miracle as to why she's having the recurring need to take a personal day unexcused.
Oh, well then I would ask her that.
I ask her that. Like if you want.
Did you hear that question? Would you like to weigh in on that?
So most of those are linked to the fact that I have chronic migraines, and that usually happens between 1 and 3 times a month, depending on how stressful the month has been. And there are some of them, due to GI surgery and repeated abdominal surgery, a very sensitive GI system, which can, even the slightest thing that upsets my stomach, can cause me to not be able to leave a bathroom. So they're all for illness.
So they're medical-related things. So, Jane, does that answer your question for Dr. Miracle?
I'm curious then why her employer didn't show it as sick, unexcused. Sick, unexcused absence instead of just personal. Because there were other areas where they did indicate illness, like on July 26th, that she had to leave early because she was sick.
Victoria has a comment on this.
Jane, it's Mark. I was just saying that if we have more questions regarding medical-related concerns, that she has the right to have those discussions take place in executive session.
Okay. At this point, I don't have any more questions of her. She's given, I understand she's given some medical information in open session. I'm that's her response to them, and I'd like to hear from the employer And if